This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 29th of March, 1962. The title of this lecture is Q&A Period, CCH's 3D Crisscross. This tape is 50 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Lecture 2. Mar 29, 8012. Lecture subject, blank. Giving this lecture to give you an opportunity to ask some questions. If anybody feels that they just can't help but reverse the flow, do so. Any questions? Any questions? Yes, Herzog.
Well, I'd like to know that if you have a case and you process in the turn-on moves up, so about 3.5, 4, and it stays for a long while there, and still suddenly it talks to you and boom, it comes down, you know, in one fell swoop, without him necessarily making a cognition or anything really happening. But this is a kind of a pattern.
The case always does this?
That's right.
That's a repetitive tone arm motion, and is a peculiar phenomenon. Of where the tone arm goes to the same points and does the same thing without something happening. There's a thing called a stage 4 needle. Well, this is the equivalent behavior on a tone arm. And it's actually a circulation between two masses. And the individual has mass 1 and mass 2. In other words, valence 1 and valence 2. And you'll find out that when a case is pretty heavily pushed in, you can almost hear the click when they go through these valences. And valence 2 reads at 3, and valence 1 reads at 2, let us say, and they go click, 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 click. And it hasn't anything to do with tone arm motion. It is an odd phenomenon that you've seen there. You shouldn't suspect that when you see it creeps up to 2.25 and then it goes to 2.75 and then edges up to 3 and then comes back to 2.5. That's not the same action. It rises up and will get to about 3.25, and sometimes it's much worse than this. Sometimes it goes up to 4.5, more usual even, and then clank, all of a sudden goes to 3.25 and 4.5. 3.25, 4.5, 3.25, 4.5, 3.25. And if you see any variation, adjust your trim knob. There are such cases. There are such cases. You shouldn't confuse it with tone arm motion, because it isn't. That's just a direct read on valence 1, a direct read in valence 2. It's unmistakable, by the way. You wouldn't be wondering very long whether you had a case like this or didn't have a case like this. I mean, I've seen a case hung up in this for quite a while and then all of a sudden bust through and do something else. But there are some cases, you get them in, get them on a meter, and they do nothing else but this. And the auditor sits there and happily thinks the case is moving like mad, and actually the case is going exactly no place. It's as bad as this. When the PC talks to the auditor, he's in valence 1. When the auditor talks to the PC, he's in valence 2. We just go click, 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 and the thing reads proportionally. Okay? Right. Yes, Charles?
In this bulletin on CCHs, you mentioned you run the CCHs 1, 2, 3, and 4, and so they're runnable without somatics or reasonably flat, and reasonably flat. Would you elucidate a little bit on reasonably flat?
Well, any CCH type process, for instance, notice that room object is actually a CCH. It actually comes under that classification because it's a direct having a straight observation process of the present time environment. All right, if that turned on a somatic, you have to continue to run it until the somatic drops out. That is the fundamental of what you're talking about. See, the fundamental is that in view of the fact that only a CCH will turn off the somatic, it turns on, or a series of, you know, running through, maybe the somatic will hang for a while and then it'll finally shift down. You're honor bound if you start the CCHs to run the somatics flat off of them. Now, if you had a case that the somatics came off but they were still ragged in spots, you would continue to audit it until the PC didn't mind any of them. So one, be sure and run them as long as they generate somatics. That's vital. That is a must. And then we have the nice thing to do, which gets the full benefit out of the CCHs, is run them so the PC can do them all willingly and do them all well in sequence and rotation and doesn't bother them and so forth. Take off the gross change that you get on the CCHs. The gross change is, of course, the somatic. And then the less gross change is the raggedness or the irregularity and the little unwillingnesses and that sort of thing that you run into. Does that answer that question?
Yes, thank you.
Right. Yes?
Norm, would there be any extra value in running the CCHs at the beginning and end rhythms?
Yeah, well, I didn't mention that when I was going over it again because I said I was going to mention it. I'll mention it now. Thank you for bringing it up. If you wanted the CCHs to produce the highest possible gain with the least possible blow on PCs who were pretty sensible anyway, you'd probably put in your beginning rudiments and do your end rudiments on a meter and do the body of the session on the CCH. It makes a different breed of CCH, which would, of course, be rather understood to come about if you started using the CCHs not on very low-scale PCs exclusively, but started using the CCHs on middle-range PCs. You could possibly have a situation like this. The PC is sitting there with a howling withhold, you see, of some kind, and that's been missed, and the PC is blowy because of the withhold, and then you get something going on one of the CCHs that causes him to blow, and your PC tries to blow 10 times as hard. In other words, by doing this, you could soften up the blow factor, and the PC at the same time would tend to stay in session a little bit better. But I would still rather leave this in an auditor choice proposition because it has not been done. You see? It's a fact offered without experimental background. And I ordinarily tell you when this is, and if you want to go ahead and do it, do so, and we'll rack up a few of them, we'll look it over and see how it works, and then it would be whether you did it or whether you didn't do it. But it's certain that on many cases you can't do the beginning and end rudiments on a meter in the CCHs. You see, that's impossible. But it's also become certain that if you're going to start running people just because their tone arms don't move, because the auditor is not running the right prep check or something of the sort, well, probably the case would make a better gain if you ran beginning and end rudiments. I don't necessarily say it would. I say it's not necessary to do or unnecessary to do at this stage of the game. This is something that would require more data about. I think there would probably be an additional benefit to the CCHs if it were done that way. And I think also an auditor could get so involved with the beginning and end rudiments, he didn't do any CCHs. So maybe the thing has blessings and maybe it has curses. It is an idea offered rather than otherwise. Okay? You bet. Any other questions? Right.
On 3D crisscross, is there any indication whether definitely we should upterm each item as they come up or get them across?
Well, originally, we hit it in a sloppy way. In 3D crisscross, we did several, and then start upterming. Get several lines, and then start upterming. And I don't know that this isn't the best method. Once again, we're on a data question mark. I do know this, that some items are so heavily charged, and the PC gets so momentarily and so tremendously fixated on the item that you actually couldn't do much more than opterm them. But on a little work I have been doing recently, I still favor the first method we were using, of getting several lines and then finding out, and then reading down the items and finding out which one of them is particularly live today and obtermate, you know. There's the possibility that if you did 20 lines without a single opterm, that you would be running the PC into nothing but sensation. And the PC would just be getting dizzier and dizzier and dizzier. And now I can give you a rule by which you can follow this. The rule is a bit sloppy, but it is still a rule. And that is, if your PC, after you've done 1, 3, 5 lines, is starting to complain of dizziness, in other words, lots of sin, or is getting continually griefy, or something, anything that is under the heading of sensation, you know, miss emotion or dizziness or sensation, you know, everything is going far away and coming to them again. At that stage, you have gone too far without opterming. And the thing to do is to opterm. That's when you must opterm. When your PC is getting a lot of heavy sin, then you must opterm. But I wouldn't do that just because the PC was getting heavy sensation on one line. Well, so he got heavy sensation on this line, and at the end of that, and then you did another line, and the PC is now really getting heavy sensation. And between session, is starting to go dizzy. Now you've got to. Now you've got to opterm. The thing, the way to cure that is to opterm. So within these tolerances, it doesn't much matter when you do it, but I can tell you when you must do it. Okay? All right. Yes?
And you do that by assessing your items, taking them on a chart.
Yes, the first way we were doing this is probably the best way. That is to simply get a lot of lines, then read through several of items that you've already found. You've got maybe 4, 5, 6 lines. You read those and you find out that one is really knocking. That's the one to opterm. Yeah. And if you're going to opterm all of them at that time, you would read through the remaining ones and find out the heaviest one and opterm that one until you'd opterm them all. You, of course, would really opterm them all. You wouldn't leave one out just because it wasn't knocking. You'd opterm anything that you'd ever found, even if it was wrong. Try an opterm or wrong line sometime. That is really marvelous. That winds up back of nowhere faster than any other operation I could guess at. If you come up with a wrong item on an original line, and now you're going to opterm it. PC goes way out in the left field and falls in a gopher hole. That's the end of that. Okay. Yes?
Could you tell me when you start doing the third line, how many lines do you get of first and opterms before you start to opterm, you know, do your third opterm?
No.
When you get your one item, then you opterm. Do you go down further down your line, you opterm again?
Oh, well, opterm smoothly. In other words, if you're going to start opterming, you wouldn't get your third item until every first item had a second item.
Yes, I mean, right?
All right, now you get everything a third item. And you wouldn't start getting anything a fourth item until everything had a third item. In other words, you'd fill up the lot. It'd be perfectly all right to have, as far as I know, and from what I've seen of this, to have 20 first items. With no second items at all, see, because you've got one item each, unless you run into this sensation thing I was talking about, and then your person starts going dizzy and so forth. Between session, you better start opterming. Well, the moment you start opterming, opterm the lot, see, but take the first one that's the heaviest one. Now, don't get your third item until you've got the second item for everything. In other words, keep a balance to that degree. The reason why, if you don't do that, is you start losing lines. You lose lines inevitably anyhow. Lines all start to cone in toward a limited number of items. But you start getting the third one before you've got the second one, and the bank gets all monkeyed up so that you get your second one over here as the third one, you've already lose the line. See, that's real heavily charged, and it appears over on the wrong line, and the next thing you know, you're narrowing much too fast. Okay? All right. Yes, Fred?
Would the sensation phenomena also apply to the pain phenomena? If you were getting only pain,
I'm sadistic.
You would continue on if you would not train it then?
It'd be almost impossible for the PC to maintain his terminal. You see, the mechanics of the thing, Fred, are these, that the PC is his terminal, and the terminal always has pain on it. And here is this terminal on which there's pain facing outwards always against an enemy. So you've given this terminal he's stuck in an enemy, an enemy, an enemy, an enemy, and he gets dizzy because he just got too many enemies. But on the pain phenomena, he's simply being somebody else. You see, and you actually wouldn't get that kind of a phenomenon. You won't get 3D crisscross turning on constant pain, but you will get 3D crisscross turning on constant sin.
Thank you.
You see why?
Yes.
Yeah, all right.
I
you
just
bet.
Wondered why you left out the one side.
Yeah, well, that's the reason why is the PC as his terminal is never opposed to the PC as his terminal. And you can give him too many enemies. He's stuck in being a cat. And you don't know what he's stuck in. You haven't found a cat yet, you see. You're finding a lot of other parts of the package. But actually, all this time, he is being a cat, very obsessively. You've never relieved this one, you see. And you get a lion, and you get a dog, you see, and that's real cheerful. And you get a dog catcher. And then you will go along a little bit further, and you get a housewife, and you say, this is interesting here. We're finally finding his female characteristics, you know. And then we get a small house, and then we get a sandbox. You see, up to this time, we haven't added up what we've got there, you see. And the PC can actually start stacking up, and the phenomenon that he's stacking up, and these are all again a cat. It's looking like a mighty hostile environment to the PC by this time, and he'll start going, ooh, ooh, wog, wog, and actually get dizzy enough that he can't walk up and down stairs. I mean, it can get that gruesome. And also, you've occasionally heard of a PC where the room walls of the room went out of plumb? That's all part of the same sin, by the way. That's just sin. That's too many opterms, too many enemies. I didn't mean to beat it on the head. But it's interesting, the fact that the second he's out of a cat, you see, so a cat has lots of enemies. Now he is being a warrior. That's his terminal. All right, that's got lots of enemies too, but one of its enemies is not a cat. Okay, right. The mechanics of the mind. They're very mechanical. They for sure are. Gets to be fruitless after a while to get lines when sin is on too strong, by the way. Because you just get in opposition to the same thing. You just get more and more oppositions to the same terminal. And those lines are all going to disappear. So you're just overworking yourself for nothing. That's only when sin turns on. Okay. You sure started one with that. All right. Any other questions? Well, I'm glad you know it all. I'm peculiar in that. I don't. Yeah, Jen.
Are these two still correct from last spring with the CCHs again? If the PC fights you tooth and nail steadily for 20 minutes, that's no change.
That's correct.
Or weep steadily for 20 minutes and come off it for then.
Yeah, that's relatively speaking correct. You can be too severe with this because the PC, you understand, would have to be in a very interesting state to have no change in the fighting or no change in the crying. You know, for a PC to weep without change for 20 minutes, it'd be very peculiar. But by the definition, that is absolutely correct. The PC weeps for 20 minutes, and he weeps the same for 20 minutes. You've reached a point of no change in that CCH.
There was another half to it, and that was the business about you don't count a somatic, which the PC simply describes to you, but you can't observe it on his body. You can't see him clenching or clutching bodily parts in anguish.
That's right. If you cannot detect,
you can't see it.
If you can't detect the somatic on the PC because of physical representations, the PC doesn't have one, as far as the auditor is concerned. The auditor never buys any statements of the PC. These are nonverbal facts about the CCHs. CCHs are nonverbal. You see that PC and he's going this way, you know, and so on. All right, so there's something wrong and the PC's got some weird things going on in the cranium and it hurts. All right, fine. And the PC says, oh, I have a splitting headache, and you do this just one time longer, and my head is just going to fall off, and this is absolutely killing me. And I've never had anything kill me as hard as this is killing me, and so on. Has no validity with the auditor. Which has no validity. We've had too many PCs dream up somatics. That's where that comes from. They'll go into valences of victims and give you a long line of symptoms and so forth. And they get at the motivator side of it. When that motivator thing starts running out, they give you victimization dramatizations. Of course, pain, factually speaking, is a victimization dramatization. Okay?
Yeah.
All right. Yes?
I wanted to add something up about what Dan said. If the preacher, say, happens to be, I haven't seen this particular thing, but if the preacher should be crying for 20 minutes solid without change, just boo-hoo-hoo, the same type boo-hoo-hoo, but say that before you looked at your watch, he or she began crying 2 minutes before your 20-minute period, so that in fact he had been crying 22 minutes, but without change, you know, I mean without any change in crying. So on the basis of the process of turning it on, if continued, will turn it off, could you then make an exception to that 20-minute period? You see what I mean?
No, actually you can strain at these things too hard.
Yeah.
Because for the exact same boo-hoo-hoo to carry on for 20 minutes, it's not going to run out. That's all there is to it. It just isn't going to. You're not likely to see any change in it at all. But remember, for 20 minutes of exact boo-hoo-hoo without ever any change of note or sniffing up and saying, well, we'll be brave now, and nothing like that happening, it's quite unusual. And if the PC started, you know, and so on, well, all right, and went on for 2 seconds, and then boo-hoo, and then so on and so on. Those are all changes.
Right.
We've got here actually an ideal situation or a theoretical situation as opposed to a practical one. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Right, on the subject of pain, why is the pain on the PC's terminal?
You tell me. Come on, Peter. Tell me.
Well, he's in the victim violence.
All right.
But this seems to doesn't phase with the fact that
I'm not being smart with you.
Mm-hmm.
I really meant it. Tell me. I'm not being smart. I don't know. I just tell you that that's an empirical observation. It's the darndest thing I ever saw in my life. How come the PC only experiences pain when he's in a terminal? How come he experiences sensation when he's in an opposition terminal? The difference between these two things is fantastic. And the reason it is so fantastic is if you run a PC on the op term, you just wrap him up and put him on ice. You ruin him. You run him on one of these painful terminals, he runs like a dream. Yeah, all right.
Vertigo kicking him in
the head. Huh?
Vertigo kicking him in the head.
Yes, it must be an overt. But possibly is in that field, you know. They possibly don't have any overts except on what they're viciously in.
If you look this over, it doesn't seem too unreasonable that a person should experience pain as himself and sensation as being somebody else. Well, that's fairly obvious. But why is it obvious? Yeah. All right, it'd be an overt. If, as his own terminal, creating pain with somebody else, he would directly feel the pain only when he was in the terminal that he created the overt. That's highly probable. Highly probable. I won't go all out on the thing. It's just an empirical observation, as far as I'm concerned. You really took the lid off, didn't you? You're sorry about it, aren't you?
I'm feeling pain.
Now, that's strictly an empirical fact, and undoubtedly it's explainable. And that's probably the explanation that you gave. But nevertheless, that is peculiar. You can always tell which is the PC's terminal. That's the only thing we could ever find that would tell the PC's terminal. You pays your money and you takes your chance, you know. You start running the op term as the terminal, oh man, all hell break loose. PC almost caves in. Your case gets some advance, oddly enough. You know, I've seen an op terminal run flat with the terminal still totally alive. In other words, it didn't seem to matter how long you ran the op term. It didn't do anything to the terminal. Backward situation for some reason or other. You can take an op term and run it overtly, and you'll see it go flat. The PC will feel better. Or God help you, if it's one of the beefier ones, he'll just go into more sand and more sand and more sand, and finally the room is spinning, and the prehab scale starts beefing up, and everything starts going to hell in a balloon, and you wonder, why did I ever begin this intensive? So does the PC. So you need some signal. You need some signal to differentiate the terminal from the op-term. And the op-term gives sen, and the terminal gives pen. That's as far as we went with it until you opened your face. Okay. Yes, Fred?
You said before, don't buy any statements from the PC since the CCHs are not verbal. But CCH 3 and 4, we do handle very clear originations, especially in 3.
Only out of courtesy.
I see.
Keep PC and be an ARC, bro. You couldn't care less. You really don't care. You don't care whether PC talks or doesn't talk or anything else. Now, in ordinary auditing, you would pay considerable attention to it as to whether the PC was advancing or not. You would monitor it to a large degree on what the PC was saying and how the PC said he felt and all that sort of thing. And oddly enough, you can trust none of that in the CCHs, because the most fundamental and basic stuff is running off, and this fundamental stuff will cause the PC to do and say the damnedest things you ever heard of, and most of them are outright lies. Now, anything that will run off, electric shock or metrazole shocks and so forth, that has as much power as that as a process, of course, will also run off all kinds of counter-creates of every description, and certainly runs off verbal counter-creates. And you're liable to get these weird statements on the part of the PC. And if an auditor wasn't fortified in advance that they are not verbal, an auditor would change his approach to it. And the auditor's approach to the CCHs is grind on, grind on, grind on. Doesn't matter whether the PC says the moon has just become solid pink tea, he grinds on. PC will try every trick in the book. I can't stand it, because this is the thing they can't stand. Communication, control, and happiness are the three things they cannot tolerate. So they'll actually think of all sorts of things to throw you red herrings and everything else. I never trust a PC when I'm running the CCHs. I don't trust them at all. PC says, I feel much better now. So
I'll bet you do. It's almost so much so I have an impulse to say, all right, where's it hurt? Because those processes will run off a fantastic river of counter-create. For instance, a person's had a lot of ridicule in his life. Supposing a person has been ridicule, raised out in the Bible Belt, something like that. Ridicule. And you start running CCHs on him, you know ridicule will run off. In other words, the counter-create comes off. So therefore, you're going to have somebody sitting there ridiculing you all the time. You should understand what you're looking at. You're looking at a counter-creation coming off of the PC. And a PC doing the CCHs never originates. They only dramatize. Nothing is truer than that. You may, in having it done in yourself, get the subjective reality on it. All of a sudden you say, what am I saying? What the hell was that? Why am I doing this? Well, it's actually some kind of a counter-create, and it's just coming off, that's all. It comes off in the muscles. Sometimes comes off in the vocal cords. Yeah. Well, if it'll run off electric shock, it'll certainly run off Mama's jeering. Well, therefore, your PC will jeer. All right. Let us suppose he was had a parson for a father. And all his father ever said to him, he lay there with a broken leg, is, I'm sure everything will be all right now. See? And his father would beat him and say, I'm sure everything will be all right now. And his father would kick him down the stairs and say, I'm sure everything will be all right now. And give him a new bicycle and say, I'm sure everything will be all right now. You audit this PC, the PC will tell you, I'm sure everything will be all right now. He just can't help himself. He's going to tell you that, that's all. And you fool, if you believe him, you probably haven't vaguely run it out, you know. So you just don't pay any attention. You'll be on the safe side. You don't have to get in a games condition with a PC. Just ignore it and do the CCHs. Okay? All right, you bet. That's a point I'm glad you brought up, Fred, because it's an interesting point. The process is so heavy, you know, the CCHs are so heavy that a person goes into these dramatizations, he just can't help but dramatize the doggone things. Sometimes he feels silly. Sometimes he feels this way and that way, watching himself dramatize these things. But if the PC is aware of the fact he's dramatizing, why is the auditor paying any attention? Okay.
Is there
yes.
Any reality factor to be established in the CCHs?
Any reality?
Factor. As start of the session or after the session, if he inquires about changes or anything, is that to be established there? Told him?
Oh, you mean get your R factor in as to what you're going to do and that sort of thing?
Or rather inquiries after the session.
And after the session, answer his questions,
yes,
and so forth. It'd only be proper for an auditor to pay attention to this. That's as close as you must get to rudiments. Is you tell a PC what you're doing, you tell a PC why you're doing it, or anything you care to. Try to get the PC's agreement to do it before the session begins. Anything you would care to do to get a session started, or anything you were able to do, and then you run the session anyway. See? And after it's over, the PC wants to know this, or he wants to know that, or he wants to know something or other, and so forth. Well, if you can tell him without evaluating for his case and so forth, by all means do so. And you'll find the PC will stay in a closer ARC with you. Yes, the R factor is established in all cases. In essence, you do it by rudiments. But, you know, see demonstrations I've been giving you? Usually before I start a session, we'll get some kind of a rundown on an R factor. Seldom after the session, but certainly before the session, because just before the session ends, you have, is there anything you'd care to say or ask before I end this session? See? And you get your R factor questions at that time.
But I normally will talk about auditing to the PC or ask them how they've been doing or something of the sort before a session begins. Give them time to catch their breath and brace up to it. Well, it's that type of R factor that you establish in the CCHs, or you tell the PC what you're going to do. Say a bunch of drills, and I'm going to do them. We'll see if you can do them. And I'm not above leading the PC into a complete trick on the basis. Tell the PC, well, there are a bunch of drills, and very smart people can do them, and very stupid ones can't. Well, let's see if you can. Anything, it doesn't matter what. The CCH has become most trying to me when they start in at a high scream. And it's a high scream from there on out, and you're obviously just breaking a person to pieces bit by bit and leaving the chips and punks of flesh all over the floor. And it's just a wrestling match from the word go, and no R factor of any kind can be established. I always have the feeling when I see this is happening that an R factor could have been established. Inevitably, I have this feeling. I always wish I had established the R factor better. Okay?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, Jim.
Referring back to dramatizations that occur in the CCH's room, how closely might these be connected to terminals and optimals?
Oh, very closely. Yes, very closely.
Would you like to
say some more? No, not particularly. Because nothing can be read out of it. The worst that the PC is sitting in starts to discharge, because the one thing this circuit can't do is duplicate. And another thing the circuit can't do is have. And the other thing the circuit refuses, of course, is control. So you start to give a person control communication and having this, and inevitably they start blowing in and out of 3D crisscross items. And these things will bang in and out most gorgeously. But normally, you'll find your PC is usually sitting in no more than one. And this thing will try to discharge. Mm-hmm. And the PC will get these heavy masses beginning to occur around him that he's never, quote, had before, unquote. They've always been there, but he's had them totally not-ised. And the CCHs knock out the not-is. So, weird things show up that the PC has never seen before, but the simple reason of the vanishment of the knot is. The communication, control, and havingness run out the knot is and start to get an is. Of course, it shows up this valence. It's inevitably a valence. And around him, some opterms will inevitably show up. Now, they very occasionally show up as actual masses that the PC has never been aware of before. And he thinks they've been turned on by the CCHs. And he thinks they have been made tougher by the CCHs. Neither case is true. If anything, they've been slightly turned off. And his feelingness has gotten up to a point where he could feel them. These are true. And you'll notice in doing the CCHs, these surrounding masses of the PC will tend to loom up where the PC has not seen them before. And he'll start to get somatics inside himself that he has not seen before and not felt before. And then these will discharge, and very often he moves on the time track in the valence he is in to a more comfortable position. To run them all out by the CCHs would be impossible. Quite interesting, but the phenomena which you see in the CCHs is the phenomena of a valence, and the phenomena which occurs around the PC is the phenomena of opterms.
It ties in with the familiarization too, no?
That's right.
Because the preacher, if he's pretty sharp, would get a familiarization with the kind of terminal he's going to encounter later on.
Yes. That's right. Very definitely true. Okay, Jim. All right. Any others? Yes, Jen.
Since Peter's question, I have been wondering if there is or could be manufactured a pair of definitions that would clearly distinguish between pain and sensation. Practically, they're not hard to tell apart. But to put it into words...
Well, I'd say it is very simple.
Oh.
It's very simple. Now, wait a minute. It's very simple. Unfortunately, it would be impolite of me to say, Richard, shake her. And Richard, stick her with a hat pin. But those would be definitive.
Yeah.
Got the idea?
Yeah.
Or Richard, disorient her. See? All right, that's sensation.
Yeah.
Sensation is that which is produced by reason of other beingness and dislocations and terminals are produced by direct contact between the thetan and an identity. The pain is produced by the directness of the contact. In other words, the PC is more intimately connected with the terminals, always, because he is the terminal. And he feels more directly the pain involved in the thing. All right, what is pain? Pain is heat plus cold plus electrical shock. That is pain. Now, if those three things are combined exactly, and somebody touches them, a thetan touches them, he gets that experience known as pain. It comes at the wavelengths of 1.8 on the tone scale is the sensation wavelength that he gets, and that is known as pain. He must be intimately connected with the mass. In other words, he must be touching the mass with an idea that he is it. As a difference than other is it. All right, now get the idea. You know this is your hand. And you put it down on your heat, cold, electrical shock gimmick. The response which you would get, knowing this was your hand, would be the sensation as pain. It would be quite sharp and it would have a very definite wavelength and so forth. Now, if as you touch this table, somebody picked up the table and moved it around, or pushed the table up against your hand, or shook the table, see, you get sensation. Now, emotion is more intimate. Emotion is more intimate, like tears and apathy and that sort of thing, is more intimate to the person than ordinary motion, but is still within that band. I wouldn't go so far as to say that emotion was exclusively an op-terminal action or exclusively a terminal action, but I would go so far as to say that sensation could include emotion rather safely in your adjudication of the situation, and that it pain definitely determined the terminal. The sensation is what you get being kicked up 150 feet into the air, tumbling over and over, and let fall. Now, that would give you a sensation. Being taken out and hung over the side of a building and told you were going to be dropped, I think that would give you a sensation. Get the differences in these things. The sensation is inevitably dislocation of space, and pain is inevitably alteration of form. Where emotion fits between these two things is a question. Yes?
Well, this isn't strictly a question, but with regard to Peter's question about why would a terminal have the pain end of it, we might have an attention factor, because I notice when you're hurt, your attention snaps inward. Mm-hmm. And when you have sensation, your attention tends to snap upward.
I think that's probably a very reasonable answer.
The up-term would be over there and the pain would be in. So it's
right. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is the difference of why you have these things as opposed to their existence. Yeah. They do exist.
Yeah.
Now, why they exist? Well, some explanations could be given. He had a good one. Self always has the overt, so therefore is the one that hurts, because therefore he's pulling in hardest on himself, trying to keep from pushing out against the other. I don't know. Biggest mistake anybody makes, of course, is regarding a human body as self. Mm-hmm. That's marvelous. Of course, you can regard anything as self. Just anything. I can think of some manufacturer regarding a factory as self. When somebody drops a wrench into one of the drill presses or something and smashes it up, and he goes, ouch. Actually, it's not the least bit peculiar. Might sound odd, but it's within the framework of it. He considers the factory himself. And you've seen mothers double up like jackknives when little Johnny is hitting the brisket. And she regards little Johnny as not an op term, but herself, an extension of self. I imagine if you smashed up an E-type out here. So that'd be the way it is. All right. Well, it's nice to have a question period for a change. I hope that you've enjoyed it as much as I have. And I also hope that your next couple of days auditing will be as successful as it has been getting lately. Your auditing is getting more successful. Have you noticed? Have you noticed that your auditing is getting more successful? Have you thought that it wasn't? Yeah. You're getting more successful. Is auditing getting dangerous? Dangerously successful. Well, I want you to get these lower edges fixed up. I want you to get CCHs and prep checking, 3D crisscross all wrapped up, because the class 4 stage I pretty well got worked out, and it's just about the easiest stand on the head that anybody ever did. It's all in reverse. Prep checking is actually harder than 3D crisscross, and apparently, class 4 is much easier than 3D crisscross. So we run backwards on these classes. The easiest action comes at the highest class. That's the way it's happening. That's the way it is. But of course, it's only easy because you can do the two lower classes. I pretty well got that end of the game wrapped up. As a matter of fact, I can see the goal posts in the end of the line. And I've been studying for quite a while to find out the best way to handle terminals and that sort of thing. And I had to wind up with some new factors of common denominators of terminals. And that was one to wrestle with. And we needed that one before we could go on with class 4, and so we wound up with that one, so it's all easy going from here on out. Probably. But all of you should be very good at these lower levels before you get on to the upper one. I want you all to have 20 or 30 or 40 items. I think that's not unreasonable. 30 or 40 items on your 3D crisscross plot. I think that's easy. I think you should get your basic chain shaken out. I'm more eager now to make sure that you get any CCHs that are going to be flattened, and any 3D crisscross you're going to get done, and to learn how to do prep checking very, very well. Learn how to do it very well, as opposed to putting your end-all weight on it, because actually prep checking can be used after the fact of 3D crisscross, don't you see? And it's most valuable after the fact of 3D crisscross. So I'd be glad to see you wrap up your CCHs as an auditor and as a PC, and wrap up 3D crisscross as an auditor and as a PC. See, so we can get on with the rest of this sort of thing. Okay? Mm-hmm. Thank you.